Hello, Star Trek fans, and welcome to the Rebinge Deep Space Nine podcast. My name is Kim.
And my name is James.
And we're watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine from the beginning, one episode at a time. Welcome back to the podcast. Today we are on Season 2, Episode 7, entitled Rules of Acquisition. This episode aired November 7th, 1993. Before we start talking about this episode, is there anything from the previous podcast that you would like to discuss?
No, it was perfect.
Well, the podcast may have been perfect, but I did find some information on Memory Alpha,
yeah.
And I bumped into this little bit on the bottom of the page about the episode where it talks about the writer not being particularly happy about some rewrites that took place.
Oh.
Writer Evan Carlos Summers, who wrote the original script, believed some of the changes made in rewrites were largely stereotypical, something he had wanted to avoid. That was interesting. So the writer himself wasn't particularly thrilled with the rewrites of the episode, and it turned out to be pretty much all the things we complained about. So I agree with him.
Yes, I would too.
Well, we did discuss later, after we were finished recording, how it seems like they could have made M'Lara a better, more workable suit in all environments. Like, we have transporter technology, space travel, artificial gravity, environmental controls that work for any type of alien, but yet we can't come up with something like what Ripley used in Aliens.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
We just put her in a wheelchair.
Yeah, it just seemed like we could have done more.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's talk about this episode.
Okay.
In the cold open, we open with Morn passed out in his puffer jacket. Odo wakes him up and tells him he knows the rules, no sleeping on the promenade.
All I could think of at this point was, woke up in a Soho doorway, a policeman knew my name. You know, the opening from the Who song?
They should have played that song, although they didn't have the rights for it, obviously.
Yeah, it would probably be very expensive.
Right. So Morn gets himself up and lumbers over to the closed door of Quark's and looks in, and he's locked out.
Once again, why is Quark's closed? Hasn't he heard of Vegas?
Because they have a private poker game going on.
We
see some Ferengi, including Ram and Quark, around a table playing a card game, which we later learn is called Tongo. I'm sure this game makes sense to someone, but it involves round playing cards, a big wheel in the center that people spin when it's their turn, and everyone throws little bars of latinum into a bowl in the middle. And somehow there's also dice. We don't really get the rules, but there's a lot going on in this game.
Yeah, there does seem to be an awful lot going on.
The wheel stops and everyone looks at Dax, who we didn't know was there at first. The risk is to you, Lieutenant, Quark says. Dax says, I could probably think better without your hand on my thigh. Ugh. Why doesn't she just pop him? Anyway, I don't get it.
Quark is always being inappropriate.
It's 300 years in the future. Oh my God. So
yeah, but they're Ferengi.
The other Ferengi all snicker. This is why I don't want to watch Ferengi. This is why Ferengi are irritating. It's like they purposely don't want me to like them. At least they don't want women to like them. Or they don't care. They don't think women watch the show, which is a complete mistake. We're off to a crappy start. Quark asks if she's going to confront, evade, acquire, or retreat. So these are the options, apparently, in Tongo. She says confront, and she lays her cards out. The other Ferengi are all disappointed as she wins the pot in the middle.
That's probably the best way to annoy a Ferengi.
Take their money.
Actually out-Ferengi them.
Rom asks if she ever loses. Quark asks how she got so good at this game, and she says Curzon played it all the time. And Rom says, oh, well, that explains it. Curzon is beating us, not this female. Dax says this female is better than Curzon ever was.
Boom.
And a prettier one, Quark says. And Jadzia nods in agreement, which, okay, I'm just going to keep going. Maybe so, Rom says, but I prefer a Ferengi female, one who never wears clothes, never talks back, and never plays Tongo. My notes say, did we go back to season one? We've regressed.
Well, I think what you're seeing here is them being typically Star Trek, of just being so in your face to show how sexist Ferengi society is, and doing it in that extraordinarily unsubtle way.
Yeah, I know.
In season one, did they intend Bashir to be a Ferengi, and they just kept all the same dialogue and lines, but changed him to a human?
Maybe, oh my gosh. Dax asks Quark if that's how he prefers his women, naked and submissive. Quark asks if she finds that lifestyle appealing. Don't you wish, she says, and Quark is like, I do, I really do. It's so gross. One of the Ferengi at the table, who Rom calls an insolent young waiter, gets Quark's attention. He holds out his hand and tells Quark to try what looks like some beans or nuts that he has. And the dude says, it's a way to double your beverage profits. So Quark tastes one, and then he takes a drink from his cup. "You see," the waiter says, "you immediately reach for your drink." "Yes," Quark says, "amazing. You don't even know that you're thirsty." The young guy says that they are Grimalian sand peas. They inhibit the secretion of the salivary glands while drying out the tongue. It works every time. If you replace the complimentary low-carb beans at the bar with sand peas, you won't be able to fill your customers' glasses fast enough.
I like how Rom in the background to all of this is looking very disappointed.
Yeah. Why would the Ferengi have complimentary anything sitting on the bar?
Yeah, it doesn't sound like Ferengi.
Complimentary things that will make you thirsty? That sounds right. That yeah. I get.
Right.
But I don't know about those low-carb beans. We mentioned them one other time. I think it was in Move Along Home when Sisko was sitting at the bar eating them.
Maybe they're very salty.
Maybe. Quark asks the young guy what his name is, and he says Pell. And then Quark quotes the 59th rule of acquisition, which is, "Free advice is seldom cheap," wondering what this is going to cost him. And Pell quotes Rule 22, that a wise man can hear profit in the wind. He says he knows all 285 rules, plus the various commentaries. He doesn't intend to be a waiter forever.
So is this where we learn there are 285 rules?
This is the first time I've heard it.
Yeah.
"Good," Rom says. "Then you're fired." Quark tells Rom to shut up, saying when it comes to business, his brother has the weak little lobes of a female. He asks Pell what made him take a job on the station, and Pell says he wanted to learn from the very best. And I wrote down, uh-oh. Quark always falls for flattery.
Yep.
Quark says, well, that brings to mind the 33rd rule of acquisition, and they both quote the rule saying, "It never hurts to suck up to the boss." And then they laugh. And
Did
Dax
you notice
smiles.
Rom rubbing his ears in the background?
No, like he's stressed out.
After Quark insults him about the weak lobes.
Oh, like his lobes are not weak?
Yeah.
I thought it was funny when Dax was smiling at them because she looks like she's finding this whole thing really charming.
Yeah. I think she just likes to watch the degenerates.
Maybe that's it. At this point, Grand Nagus Zek calls Quark. Quark runs over to the bar to take the call. He turns up on the screen. When Quark sucks up to him a little, the Nagus calls him the perfect little toady. He tells Quark that the Ferengi expansion into the Gamma Quadrant is about to begin, and he wants Quark to be his chief negotiator.
Inconceivable!
This is an opportunity to make more profit than you've ever dreamed. Quark is like, oh, and then we cue the theme song.
So the Nagus is offering Quark a great opportunity.
Yep.
Surely if Quark was a smarter businessman, he would realize that this probably comes with terrible strings attached.
Yeah, but Quark also thinks he's a genius.
Oh, that's true. I would say there's three rules you should follow when the Nagus offers you something. One, he's up to something. Two, it's very unlikely to benefit yourself. And three, you'll probably end up dying.
Well, I think if you looked at the rules of acquisition, it would tell you to be cautious in this situation. Like he just said earlier, nothing's ever free.
I'm going to speculate that this is why the Nagus is successful in Ferengi society, because he's probably one of the few who just don't lose their common sense when profit is mentioned.
Right.
He's greedy, right. I mean, he admitted himself, but not as greedy as he used to be.
Jeez, you got that line in again.
Thank you. But it's not at the expense of his caution
right.
and good sense, which I think is kind of different from the other Ferengi who, like, lose all sense of clarity when there's profit.
Yes. Now we go to Sisko's office, where Sisko has asked to see the Grand Nagus. The Nagus offers up some Hyperion beetle snuff to Sisko and Kira, who decline.
More for me. Wallace Shawn is just awesome in this.
His big purple bodyguard dude, played by Tiny Ron, which is still hilarious, is standing behind him quietly. He snorts some of the powder, which is not something I needed to see with that giant gross nose. So then he sneezes, and the purple guy hands him a hanky, and as he grossly blows his nose, Kira and Sisko are grossed out and try not to watch. That was funny.
Yes. The two of them are standing there just horrified.
Ugh. Finally, we get to the point of this meeting as Sisko says he heard that the Nagus is planning to host a business conference on the station. Yes, the Nagus says, with the Docei, a race from the Gamma Quadrant, a very profitable opportunity for all concerned. Kira says profitable for the Ferengi, maybe. He says, are you implying something, Major?
Fake news.
The Ferengi reputation speaks for itself, a reputation for honesty and decency and reliability, the Nagus shouts. Yeah, that is totally fake news. He says, you always know what to expect when you do business with a Ferengi. Which is why, Kira says, if you're smart, you don't do business with a Ferengi. Sisko very quietly and diplomatically stops her. I think you've made your point, Major.
He steps in nicely to just stop the bickering.
Yes. The Negus doesn't think it's any of their business how the Ferengi conduct their business, but Sisko says that's true, except when you conduct it on the station. Kira says, in other words, Grand Negus, if we find out you're cheating the Dosai, I'll make sure you never set foot on the station again. As she says this, she moves closer to him and kneels down, looking him right in the eye. He flatters her and she starts to stand up, but he grabs her and stops her from standing. So tell me, Major, could Bajor use 50,000 kilos of bryzine nitrate? Of course we could, she says. With that much bryzine, we could fertilize the entire northern peninsula. Which feels like a very random fact to just pull out of your pocket. The Negus has recently come into possession of it. And to show you how much your cooperation means to me, I'll let you have the entire shipment. Sisko says, I'll still need your assurance that the Dosai will be treated fairly. The Negus gives his word and stands up to leave.
Which is pretty useless.
Yes. But before he gets all the way out, he says, let's see, 50,000 kilos at, 25% of our usual price? Sisko says, 25%? You just said you were giving it to them. Well, you're right, Commander. We're all friends here, so I'll let you have it at cost. I have a better idea, Sisko says. Why not consider the nitrate a gift to the people of Bajor? A gift, he says, confused. That doesn't sound profitable. Sisko says, it depends on whether or not you want to conduct business here. Then the Negus cackles and turns back toward him, saying, your negotiating skills aren't bad for a human. Then he says the nitrate will be delivered promptly, and he puts his hand on Kira's shoulder and says, anything else you need, come and see me personally. She's stunned, either by how gross he is or this nitrate thing, I'm not sure.
I'm going with it's the Negus creeping on Kira is stunning her.
Ugh. Sisko looks pleased with himself.
I assume the Negus is used to dealing with Federation rule followers who aren't as flexible as Sisko.
Well, but he played all the negotiation tricks. He got up and was leaving and walking away, and quite often people just naturally let them leave.
Yeah.
And don't know to carry on the conversation, but Sisko was smart enough and has probably dealt with enough Ferengi to go, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Now we are on a super close-up of the Negus's hairy ear, which I don't know why we have to keep showing that. He's telling Quark that he's been involved in some very profitable opportunities in his time, but his lobes are telling him that this might be the most profitable opportunity in Ferengi history. Now we see that the purple guy is combing his ear hair. It's just so gross. Please stop. It's so gross.
He has a lot of ear hair.
Imagine that, Quark says, and part of those profits will be mine. The Negus tells him he wants Quark to negotiate with the Dosai for tula berries, the main ingredient in tula berry wine. Quark is like, we're going into the wine business? The Negus says he wants to make it the most popular drink in their sector and corner the market. He says once we get our foot in the door of the Gamma Quadrant, they'll never get us out, which seems exactly right.
Yes. So really, this sounds like a lost leader for the Ferengi.
Yeah, it was a little confusing here because he says he wants them to negotiate with the Dosai for tula berries, but really, they're negotiating for vats of wine.
Yeah.
Not for tula berries, so it was a little confusing. Now we go back to Quark's, and Rom is wondering what tula berries taste like, but Quark doesn't care because he's going to be rich.
Shouldn't Quark be extremely worried about this?
Well, then Pell pokes his head into the conversation and says, just remember, the bigger the smile, the sharper the knife.
48th rule.
I also noticed at this point that the Sam peas are on the counter now.
I did not notice that. Good catch.
Quark recognizes the 48th rule of acquisition and asks Pell what he meant by that. Pell just wonders why the Negus would put anyone else in charge of such a lucrative opportunity. A very good question. And then Rom tries to fire Pell again in this conversation, but Quark just knocks him out of the way. Pell points out that if the negotiations are profitable, then the Negus becomes the greatest hero ever. But if they fail, he needs a fall guy.
I find it funny that Pell is the one pointing out to Quark the big picture.
Yeah.
It's the Ferengi thing. They get blinded by the idea of profit and their brain stops working.
Right.
And Pell, the waiter, is the one explaining to Quark the big picture.
And I wonder why Pell would look at things differently than Quark.
I wonder why, too. I feel sorry for Rom, though. I mean, his position here is getting usurped.
Yeah, but I also feel like it's old news. I mean, it happens constantly, but it doesn't change anything. He should just, like, go with the flow and wait for Quark to do something so stupid that, you know, he wins the bar. After Pell leaves, Rom says Pell is just jealous, but Quark thinks he's right. He realizes that if something goes wrong, it will be his fault, so he needs some help. So Rom says, from me? But Quark says no, and shoves him out of the way, asking Pell to help. Pell says, as partners? Quark says, not as a partner, an assistant. Pell says, okay, but I want 25% of whatever you make. They negotiate and they settle on 20.
Finally, Quark actually makes a good business decision.
Yeah.
I think this is the first one of the series.
Rom asks what he can do to help, and Quark tells him to deliver the drinks that Pell was delivering. So he makes Rom the waiter. But yeah, this does seem like a smart decision. Although still at this point in the episode, we're not really sure of Pell's motivation.
Right.
We go now to Pell's quarters, and he enters looking very smug. Then he looks at himself briefly in the mirror before pulling a case out from under the bed. He pulls out a rounded knife from the case, and he uses it to remove his large earlobes, revealing smaller ones underneath.
Uh-oh.
And I didn't know what that meant until she took off her jacket, revealing a female shape.
She has the small lobes of a female.
She does. And then we went to an ad break. Drama, drama.
Now, a little speculation here.
Yeah.
As ears are obviously something very important in Ferengi society, wouldn't you think that ear augmentation surgery would be a really big thing? Lots of shady clinics offering earlobe enhancements.
Probably, yeah. That probably is a big business.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it would be profitable for whoever did it.
Exactly.
But they're unlikely to have done it for a female, so it might have been hard for her to get that surgery, even if it exists.
So she'd have to get Dr. Nick to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Sisko, Kira, the Grand Nagus, the Purple Dude, and Quark are standing at the airlock waiting for the Docei to arrive. Quark is in his terrible color block jacket again with those aqua pants.
Yeah.
He says, "How do I look?" And Sisko says, "Nervous." Kira says Zek should be the one who's nervous with Quark as his chief negotiator. And then the Nagus appears to do something inappropriate behind Kira, like maybe pinch her. She says, "Do that again and I'll stick the 50,000 kilos of Bryzine right up your..." Pause.
Kira did get a good slam in on Quark there.
Yes, but she was physically assaulted and did nothing about it, which I don't buy.
That is true.
Don't buy. Makes no sense. Doesn't align with her character. I don't get it. Quark stops her to say the Docei are here, and the door opens and someone comes flying through it. Sisko reaches out for the guy as two more of the Docei step through the door. "Don't worry," the one in front says, "just a minor disagreement." These are not nice-looking folks. They have bright red painted faces with some sort of aggressive symbols on them.
Yeah.
And their bare chests are partially exposed.
I do like the makeup. If you notice, they're sort of white underneath. So it is makeup that they're wearing. I thought it was sort of kabuki theater kind of thing.
Because their bare chests are like flesh-colored or whatever. And so, yeah, that's how you know that the face paint is just paint.
Yeah.
Clearly, we're supposed to be scared of these guys. The paint is aggressive, the colors are aggressive, and then they also threw somebody in as their intro into the station. So, they're a little scary.
A little bit later in time, you see that lead alien actually ends up as an alien bounty hunter on the X-Files.
So I did want to say one other thing about this thing with Kira. This is the second time in the episode that the Nagus has touched her inappropriately, because he grabbed her in the previous scene where they're together. There is no way that a smart woman then stands right next to him with no barrier and no protection, an easy way for him to grab her again. This is so unrealistic. Women are not that stupid. This is maybe the worst part of the whole episode. I'm just so offended by that.
Oh no, there's worse to come.
But again, the thing that annoys me later, there's no way she would put herself into harm's way. Once you get it once, you're not going to just walk right into it a second time. That is so stupid. That makes me think that the writers, again, are just trying to convince me that the women think it's okay, or they're not bothered by it, or worse, they enjoy it.
Well, that's actually my point for later.
Okay, well, we'll talk about this more later. Okay, it's going to come up again.
Yeah.
In the next scene, with the two Docei sitting at a table, we can now very clearly see the main guys played by Brian Thompson, who has an exceedingly recognizable profile. Just like you said, he's the bounty hunter from The X-Files, and he also played a bad guy in so many other things, but The X-Files things is the most recognizable thing. The other Docei person is a female with the same red face paint, though her stripes go in a different direction. I wonder if this is a choice, or is it ornamental? Does it mean something? You know, how does the design on their face come about? But they never talk about that.
Yeah.
So they're sitting across the table from Quark and Pell, and Quark looks terrified. He says, "Okay, well, let's go over our offer. The Ferengi are interested in purchasing 10,000 vats of Tulaberry wine in exchange for a list of items." And he hands that to the bounty hunter guy. The bounty hunter offers 5,000 vats. Quark says that won't be enough because we're looking to establish a vast distribution network. The red-faced guy says, "I'm offering you 5,000 vats. I suggest you take it." He's very threatening. Pell says the Nagus will never agree to that. And then the female Docei speaks up saying, "This is a waste of time," and they want to talk directly to Zek. They argue a bit about this, and the bounty hunter eventually threatens to kill Quark, which was just a matter of time.
I like how he gets right in Quark's face.
Yeah, because he says if Quark is dead, then Zek will have to talk to them. Pell says, Zek selected Quark, so if you want to do business with the Ferengi, you have to talk to him. And then the two of them sit back in their chairs and say they'll think about it.
Pell isn't quite as easily intimidated by these two, whereas Quark is just a bowl of jelly.
It's pretty funny, actually.
Quark just looks wonderfully terrified here. He does a great job of just being the abject coward.
Yes. And now we go to Ops, and the purple bodyguard is coming up the elevator. Why can just anyone come up the elevator into Ops? How is there no security? It's ridiculous.
In the same way as you go to the computer and say, show me where the weapons lockers are.
Where are the weapons? But I mean, even in a hotel, you have to swipe a key to get to a floor. I mean, gosh.
He probably borrowed one of the rods from Quark.
Oh, maybe he did. Miles asks if he can help the guy, but he just walks right past Miles over to Kira. He's twice Kira's size. Her head actually comes up to his elbow, which is crazy.
That was a funny scene because it really did show just how enormous this guy is.
Yes. He gives Kira a box and then he leaves. She opens it and we see the ugliest piece of jewelry you might find at a flea market. And somehow Dak says, oh, it's beautiful, which really cracked me up. I was like, Yes. What is happening? Kira says it's latinum and she can't accept this. But she can't give it back to the giant because he's gone. He took off right away.
Yeah, whoosh.
Then she asks Dax if Zek thinks this is going to get him anywhere with her. And Dax says, probably not, but that wouldn't stop a Ferengi from trying. Kira is confused that Dax seems to admire the Ferengi. She says, well, you don't socialize with them the way I do. Looking back over 7 lifetimes, I can't think of a single race I've enjoyed more. Yes, they place too much emphasis on profit, and their behavior towards women is somewhat primitive. Kira rightfully points out that they're greedy, misogynistic, untrustworthy little trolls, and she wouldn't turn her back on them for a second. Well, neither would I, Dak says. But once you accept that, you'll find they can be a lot of fun. She wanders off and Kira is like, what? She looks appropriately perplexed.
I feel you could go really negative here and say, is this the writers, stroke producers, trying to say that, hey, girls, it's okay to hang out with boorish guys who objectify you and sexually harass you. Mm-hmm. It's cool fun, right?
It's just a lot of fun. You just don't look at them correctly.
Yeah.
You should hang out with them more, and then it would be okay.
Oh, my God.
This is so bad.
I gotta think there's some really questionable messaging coming here from the writers.
It's so bad, James. I can't.
This also goes to point out that Curzon, who we knew was a womanizing drunk, I think is a nice way of putting it.
It makes sense that he would hang out with them.
Yeah.
Yes, I get that. And I also get that she's talking about over several lifetimes, she spent a lot of time with the Ferengi. I get that. But it makes no sense to me, this whole thing that she is now in a female's body. And so the memories and the experiences of a female should be interacting with these other things as well, but she seems to have none of that going on.
I don't even know what else to put into this.
Yep.
It's such odd writing. Yeah, this is fine. It's okay. They're just guys.
It's one thing when they're showing us the bad behavior over and over and you're kind of supposed to be annoyed by it or put off by it or realize that it's primitive or misogynistic, to use Kira's word, right? Whatever.
Right.
It's another thing when you have a female character trying to explain it away.
Right.
That's a whole different level of insulting. It's just one of many reasons why I couldn't watch this show when it was on. Even if I didn't maybe put together quite articulately as I can do it now, although I'm struggling to get the words out because it's like so offensive, I can't find the right words. But even if I couldn't quite put it together then, I recognized something about the show made me uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel like a part of it. Whereas on TNG, they also had various things on there that weren't great for women. But I felt like I could be on that ship and be a part of that team.
Yeah.
I don't feel that here so many times in situations like this, where we just go down the drain.
I feel like, oddly, it's almost a sort of 70s attitude of, oh, just put up with the girls. And I say girls very specifically.
Yeah, I understand. All right. We've gone down a hole here. We should get ourselves out. Now we're playing Tongo, and the Negus tries to cheat as Dax wins again. The Negus asks Quark why he's not planning strategy for tomorrow's negotiations instead of playing cards, and Quark says he's thought of nothing else all evening. And Rom points out that's probably why he's losing so badly, which is Rom always being helpful.
That was a good zinger from Rom, and the Negus is such a bad loser.
Yeah. Quark feels that they'll have an agreement by tomorrow, but the Negus has been thinking and he wants to go for 100,000 vats instead of 10,000. The Negus tells him to do what he says or he'll take over the negotiations himself. Pell says raising the stakes is a brilliant idea. And the Negus is like, it is? It'll show the Gamma Quadrant we mean business. No wonder Quark says you're a genius. Then the Negus sends Quark off to get him some more snacks.
That was interesting because from what Pell did, it did show that the Negus is somewhat like other Ferengi and that he's susceptible to flattery.
Yes, but he didn't change anything.
Yeah.
He just was like, really?
Yeah. It sort of mollified his mood rather than...
True. That's true. It was a good distraction.
Yeah.
Which, as a female Ferengi, she's probably learned to do quite well.
Ah.
Pell runs off after Quark and the Negus leans over to Dax and says... Such loyalty must be expensive. But Dax doesn't think the loyalty is paid for. Pell comes up to Quark at the bar saying Quark will get the deal because he's good. And Quark wonders why Pell is so nice to him. And Pell says, well, for 20% of the profits, why else? Fair enough, Quark says. They sit back down at the table and they give each other like a cute little look. And Dax notices something between them.
Uh-oh. Dax might have figured out something's going on.
Yep. And next we go to the Replimat, and Pell is eating a plate of something that does not look good, although it does look like something you might get from a cafeteria.
It's classic food court food. It's just fine.
Yes. Dax sits down next to her saying she didn't know the Replimat had a Ferengi menu. Pell says it doesn't. She likes to try new things. That's unusual for a Ferengi, Dax says. Pell says she's never heard of a Trill who could play Tongo. Well, that makes us both unusual, Dax says. When Pell tells Dax that Quark talks about her all the time, Dax tells a story about a time that Quark recreated her childhood bedroom after overhearing a conversation with Kira. It was very sweet until Quark tried to kiss her. That sounds like Quark, Pell laughs. I don't care what anybody says, Dax says. I love him. So do I, Pell says. Dax asks if Quark knows this, and Pell says he doesn't even know she's female. And Dax is like, you're a woman? Lower your voice, Pell says.
That was pretty funny the way that came off. I also thought it was amusing that Dax, the science officer, hadn't figured it out.
Well, she just assumed that Pell was a dude and was in love with Quark. That seemed fine.
Yes.
Dax says this explains why she's unlike any Ferengi she's ever met, because she's never met a Ferengi woman before.
That's interesting.
And you probably never will again, Pell says. On my world, women aren't allowed to leave the house, wear clothes, or learn, or read. But I'm as smart as any man, so I made myself a pair of synthetic lobes and became one. And she came here to acquire profit, of course, but she hadn't expected to fall in love with Quark. What should I do? Pell asks. I don't know, but there's more to life than profit.
That's some really good advice right there.
Then Quark rushes in, shouting, Pell, it's time. We don't want to keep the Docei waiting. And off they run, and Dax looks a little impressed with this story. And we go to an ad break.
I still find it funny that a very accomplished, smart science officer didn't figure out that she wasn't a Ferengi male.
Yeah. Do you remember the first time you saw this, if you thought that was a female?
I remember the episode, but I didn't think she was a female up until the taking the ears off.
Well, I actually thought it was a young boy.
Yeah.
And I looked it up because I wanted to find out how old the actor was.
Oh.
Right before the reveal.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, that's weird. It's played by a woman. No wonder she looks so small. And I still didn't grok onto the fact that, oh, it's a woman pretending to be a male.
Right.
I didn't get that. But yeah, that's funny. Now the Negus is watching women walk by on the promenade and making gross noises. Kira comes up holding the jewelry box, and the Negus asks if she's come to thank him for the bryozine nitrate shipment. The closed captions, I am not kidding, says, in parens, smarmily, have a seat, he says as he pats his lap.
I would have said lecherously.
That's even better. She declines, saying she just stopped by to return the gift. She says it's lovely, but she just can't accept it. He says, then I suppose a night of wild, passionate romance is out of the question. That's right, she says. Just thought I'd ask. And she walks by him, which, why would she do that? Don't put yourself in harm's way. And he reaches over and pokes her in the butt. She doesn't do anything except say, Dax must be crazy. Why she wouldn't react, I don't know. It's so unrealistic. It's like, I can accept time travel, space travel, aliens, the wormhole, all the other things that go on in this station, but not that Kira would walk right by the guy who already grabbed her and then pinched her, giving him the opportunity to do it again and then not respond. Absolutely not. Completely unrealistic.
I think it's just more of that messaging, you know, just put up with it, girls.
It's just fun.
It's just fun.
Quark comes running up with Pell right behind him. The Negus is like, oh, the negotiations are already over. Let's see the contract. Quark drops to his knees saying, there's no contract. When he asked for 100,000 vats, they just took off and left the station. This is a complete catastrophe, the Negus says, standing up. This was your big chance, Quark, and you blew it. You may have seriously harmed future Ferengi opportunities in the Gamma Quadrant. Pell is getting upset with the way the Negus is yelling at Quark, and she pulls Quark out of the way and says, hold on a minute. We said we were going to get you the Tula Berries, and that's exactly what we're going to do. Quark says, we are. Pell says, we're going to travel to the Gamma Quadrant, find the Docei, and get them to sign the contract. And how do you plan to get there? The Negus asks. We'll take your ship, she says. And they argue a little bit about that, but the Negus eventually says, fine, use my ship.
She's not taking any prisoners here.
No, she doesn't give up. Quark grabs his hand and kisses it, and then drags Pell off with him. Now we go to the Negus's funny-looking little ship. Quark and Pell are trying to figure out why the Negus is suddenly insisting on 100,000 vats. This is a very good question.
Indeed.
Quark wonders if he's purposely trying to sabotage negotiations. Pell isn't sure about that, but she is sure that the Negus knows more than he's letting on. Quark says, if you figure out what he's up to, make sure to tell me. Don't worry, I will, Pell says.
I like the way Quark there makes the assumption that he will figure it out second.
For sure. Quark says, so far, the only thing I've done right is pick you as my consultant. Then Pell says, Quark, there's something you should know. But Quark says, you've been a great help, but you agreed to a 20% share of the profit, and that's all you're going to get. Never place friendship above profit, the 21st rule of acquisition. We are flying through the rules.
He completely misreads the situation.
Yeah, she wanted to own up to it, but she didn't.
Yes.
Back on the station, Rom is trying to keep the busy bar going. Odo asks when Quark is due back, but Rom says he doesn't know. Quark never tells him anything. This is Pell's fault, that flabby-lobed interloper. He's stealing my brother's affections. Odo says, you're better off. Rom asks if Odo would let someone steal his brother, and Odo says he doesn't have a brother, at least not one that he's aware of. But if he did have one, even one as worthless as Quark, he wouldn't let anyone come between them. Which, fanning the flame here a little bit.
Yeah, I think you have to be careful around Rom, as he will take things a bit too literally.
He really does. In the next scene, Rom is tossing Pell's quarters looking for some dirt on the troublemaker.
Once again, security shown to be crap.
Yeah, why can he get in there so easily?
Yep.
Eventually, he finds the case with the ear dagger in it, and apparently some spare ears. I guess she needs a couple pair in case something goes wrong. It's like her cosplay case that she carries around Comic-Con.
What's also funny in this scene is I think you get to see how useless Rom really is. He's tossed the whole room,
yep.
Then he looks under the bed.
Yes.
It's the last place he looks. It should be the first place you look. So I think that's, again, another one of those little digs at just Rom not being the sharpest knife.
I also couldn't figure out why Rom was so excited when he saw the ears. I mean, could the dumbest person on the station have figured out this entire plot already just by the existence of ears?
It did seem a bit odd. Surely he would have looked at it and went, oh, he's wearing fakies.
Right, exactly.
Plus, surely some guys have small ears.
Just like you were saying, there'd be some surgery you could have to enhance them.
Yeah.
Now we go to what looks like the Docei planet, and we're in a bar. There are a bunch of Docei bickering and drinking and pushing each other around. The female negotiator Docei, named Zyri, not Zyrtec, which the iPad kept turning it into, comes up behind them asking if they're enjoying themselves. Pell asks, what is this place? She says, it's a place where opportunities are made.
So they're a bit like the Ferengi, but a lot more aggressive about it.
Yes. And also they allow their females to work and be in society.
Smart decision.
The Docei are very serious about profit. Just as someone gets shot nearby to prove it. Then the bounty hunter shows up and Quark stomps over to him, tapping him on the shoulder. Aren't you on the wrong side of the wormhole? The bounty hunter asks. Quark says he just needs his thumb scan on this very lucrative contract and then he can go home. You had your chance, he says, and turns away. Quark keeps tapping his shoulder as he tries to ignore him, which just seems to annoy the bounty hunter guy, and he growls after the third time and he says, you're starting to annoy me. So then Quark picks up one of the nearby kegs and just throws it to the ground. Sorry, he says sarcastically.
I think he's finally starting to figure out how to negotiate with these people.
Yes, a little show of power. The bounty hunter grabs him by the neck and says, I should have killed you back on the station. But Quark points out that he didn't because deep down inside, he must recognize a good opportunity. And again, he tries to get a thumb scan. The guy says, all right, you can have the 10,000 vats. But Quark says, 100,000. And the guy says, that's impossible. And he walks off. Quark is very annoyed. And then Quark and Pell go into some kind of room which at first I thought was a conference table, but apparently it's a bed. And Pell wants to go back to the ship, but Quark wants to get some rest and not be too far from the bounty hunter guy in case he changes his mind.
Having seen that guy on X-Files, I wouldn't want to be that close to him.
And he's very dangerous. Yeah. He always had that little weapon that was like the little screwdriver, yes. Remember?
Yep, back of the head.
Oh my God, every time I would see that guy, he freaked me out. Well, Pell is freaked out by there being only one bed and says they should be discussing strategy, and she does everything she can to avoid sharing this bed. You know what the 103rd rule of acquisition says. She says, sleep can interfere. Quark interrupts that he doesn't care, and he tries to go to sleep. Then she tries making a toast and talks about being impressed when Quark knocked over the keg. That was risky, he laughs. And then she quotes Rule 62, the riskier the road, the greater the profit.
They really do have a rule for everything.
Yes. Well, there's 258 of them.
And commentaries.
You really know your rules, Quark says. Then Pell says, you have a really nice smile, and kisses him.
Boom.
Quark starts backing away, and she crawls after him. And then the female docile enters, asking if she's interrupting something. And Quark is like, no, and ushers her in. She says, let me give you some advice. Inglatu, which is apparently the name of the bounty hunter guy, will never sell you 100,000 vats because there aren't that many on the entire planet. If you really want 100,000 vats, you'll have to see the Karema, an important power in the Dominion.
Whoa, this is important. This is the first mention of the Dominion.
Right. Quark asks what the Dominion is, and she says, let's just say if you want to do business in the Gamma Quadrant, then you have to do business with the Dominion. Quark and Pell beam back to the Negasus ship. Quark says this is why Zek was sabotaging negotiations with the Docei. He wanted to use them to get to a more important member of the Dominion.
I'm amazed he's actually figuring out the big picture.
Quark, we need to talk, Pell says. We are talking, Quark says, trying to avoid the conversation. He doesn't want to discuss the kiss. He wants to pretend like it never happened.
Oh, he's wonderfully in denial.
Yeah. Quark says whatever the Dominion is, it's important, and he wants a piece of it. Now we go back to the station, and the Negus is saying he's very disappointed in Quark because he really wanted those Tula berries. Quark says, you and I both know my trip had nothing to do with Tula berries. Rom keeps pushing in, trying to talk to Quark, but Quark keeps pushing him off. He asks the Negus if the word Dominion means anything to him. And Zek says his information consists of little more than hints and whispers, but it's enough to know that whoever learns the secret of the Dominion will learn the secret of the Gamma Quadrant. He was disappointed the Docei didn't seem to know much, and he was hoping Quark would find someone who does. And Quark says, well, what would such information be worth to you? A lot, the Negus says. If Quark can arrange a meeting, then Negus will see to it that he earns a percentage of every Ferengi opportunity in the Gamma Quadrant. That's a lot.
That sounds pretty good for Quark.
Give me a name, the Negus says. The Karema, Quark says. The Negus says, I always knew you had the lobes for business. Rom comes in again, and Quark finally agrees to talk to him. And then we don't hear this conversation, we just see it from a distance. Rom drags Pell over to Quark, and Rom makes some motion about her ears. And then Quark leans in and Pell whispers something into his ear and he faints. It was a very weird choice of how to film that scene.
I thought it was a good technique that they used. You don't see any confrontation. You just see them talking and the reaction to it. So you don't hear anything. But the Quark fainting at the end, that was a great comedic pratfall.
Yeah. Quark wakes up in the infirmary with Bashir saying he has a bump on the back of his head. Quark says he'd like to rest here for a few minutes. And Bashir says, of course. Quark grabs Rom and asks him if he's told anyone about Pell, and he says no. Rom says he thought it would be best if Quark told Zek himself. Nobody's going to tell Zek anything, Quark says.
Yeah, I don't think that would be very good in that society.
Yeah, but Rom says she's a female that wears clothes, seeks profit, and quotes the sacred rules of acquisition. Such a female must be severely punished. Oh my God, I hate the Ferengi so much. Rom wants to tell him, but Quark says he'll transfer ownership of the bar to Rom if he doesn't tell Zek anything, and Rom agrees.
The problem with that is Rom's such a bad businessman, I wouldn't give the bar more than a month before he manages to run it into the ground.
Yeah, he'll do something dumb right away.
Yeah.
Quark goes to Pell's quarters and finds her without the fake ears. He tells her to get her costume on and pack up because she needs to get off the station as soon as possible. Pell points out that she's the only one that Quark can trust, but he doesn't want the risk. He offers her 10 bars of latinum to start a new life. She crosses her arms. If you're going to pretend to be a man, take the profit, he says. It's not about profit anymore, it's about love. I love you, Quark, and I know you care about me. What difference does it make? You'd never be happy as a Ferengi wife. She wants him to come with her to the Gamma Quadrant, where no one would care if she wore clothes or not. I care, Quark says. So she decides to start packing and leave.
Ugh.
So stupid.
It's really sad that Quark reveals his own prejudices, which directly affect his own happiness in a very negative way. I mean, this is somebody he obviously likes, but he cares more about her behaving like a Ferengi woman than he does about his own personal happiness. It's kind of sad.
Well, but it's also all the rules of acquisition. He's supposed to be worried about profit more than anything else.
Yeah.
Certainly not about love. How there could be any kind of love at all when the women aren't even allowed out. And I don't know how they feel about the men going out with each other. I have no idea. It doesn't seem like it's something they would accept since they don't accept anything else.
Yeah.
So they must not know anything about love. The concept of love doesn't make any sense in this world.
I get you. I just think it's a very bad idea for Quark to let that get in the way of personal happiness.
Yes. Now we go to Quark and Rom eating dinner with the Negus, and Rom is making some disgusting eating noises. This scene was really gross.
He's eating some more of those crunchy plastic props. Remember that from earlier?
He was, yes. I vividly remember that from the Negus episode called The Negus. The Negus says these flaked blood fleas are surprisingly succulent. It's like, why? Why do we have to be so gross?
They're just playing up the Ferengi at this point.
Yeah.
Rom does seem pretty happy that normalcy has now been restored.
Right.
Very smug in that Ferengi smug way.
Quark is too sad to eat. The door chimes and in comes Pell, dressed as a dude again. Rom says, I thought she left the station. Pell says, I hope you don't mind, Quark, but I couldn't leave without saying goodbye to the Negus. I'm glad you stopped by, the Negus says. I predict a big future for you. You certainly have the lobes for it. Oh, so you like my lobes, Pell says. The Negus, very confused,
I think we see
like,
where this is going.
Yes. Good, she says, and rips them off. Then you can have them. Quark shouts, no, and covers up her naked ears. The Negus screams, it's a female. Rom says, does this mean I don't get the bar? Oh my God, Rom.
Rom is on point.
The Negus says, Quark, this is outrageous. What's going on here? Pell sarcastically says, so tell me more about my big future. The Negus says, you have no future. I'll see to it that you spend the rest of your life in prison. Quark steps in front of her and says, no. The Negus says, let me remind you that taking business advice from a female is a violation of Ferengi law. And Quark says he didn't know she was a female. Stupidity is no excuse, the Negus says.
Quark has that in bundles.
Now, one more word out of you and you'll share her cell. Then you'd better make sure there's room for three. What will your associates say when I tell them you allowed a female to represent you in a business negotiation? I didn't know she was a female, the Negus says. Well, stupidity is no excuse, Quark counters. And the Negus sees that they're at a standoff.
Nothing better than having your own lines quoted back at you.
Oh, that's so annoying when people do that.
I would point out here, though, they're on a Bajoran station in Bajoran space with a Federation commander. So surely Ferengi law would have no jurisdiction here. And she could totally ask for asylum. I would guess either in the Federation or on Bajor. And there's nothing the Ferengi could do about it.
That is an excellent point. They're not part of the Federation, but she could still ask for asylum.
Yeah.
But also things are a little bit inconsistent here in that he does do business like with Kira.
Yeah.
And also the Dosai female. So I guess it's just Ferengi female.
I think so. It must be.
Gosh.
Well, they consider everybody else an outsider, really. We've talked about that earlier.
That's right. They're very insular. Yeah. That's right. I forgot about that. It seems that Pell's identity will have to remain our little secret, but it's going to cost you your Gamma Quadrant profits. Shame on you, the Negus shouts to Pell as he leaves. I hope you're satisfied, Quark says, as she just cost him a lot of money, which she did. I'm sorry, but it's time you learn that when it comes to accumulating profit, women are as capable as men. Well, do me a favor and don't tell anybody else that.
Aw.
She's booked passage on an Andorian transport. She says Quark should come with her, but he says he can't. She says she knows, and they kiss, which must be very difficult with all those fake teeth. That was just gross. And then she strokes his ear and says, if she can't have him, she'll take the 10 bars of Latinum after all, which is good.
I'm very impressed by her there.
But at the same time, I think where she says, it's time you learn that when it comes to accumulating profit, women are as capable as men. Are they? Because she completely screwed up this whole deal. She's not getting any profit.
She's getting 10 bars of Latin.
I guess she's getting those 10 bars, yeah. But it's not like it's a long-running thing, although they don't look for that.
Yeah, but the deal was only screwed up by...
Yeah. Okay, you're right, you're right. I wandered down a path I couldn't get out of. Cut that out.
Yeah, we'll cut that out. Fine.
Then we go to the Replimat, and Dax is having a Ractigino when Quark comes in asking if she's ready for another night of Tongo. Dax says, haven't you lost enough for one day?
Oh.
But Quark plays dumb. Dax says that Pell came to see her before she left, and she's going to miss her, and so are you, Quark. And Quark says, do you really think I'd let anyone come between us? Nice try, Quark, but I know you better than that. The end.
Dax has his number there. She knows the truth.
She knows the truth. Well, blah. Any overanalysis from you other than the overanalysis we've been doing here as we go?
Well, it's a few bits. Well, one thing I wonder about this episode is, was it really intended about same-sex relationships? But because in 93, that would be unbelievably controversial, that they made it this way of the woman in disguise. A lot of it felt that way, I thought.
Well, but then you would lose all the stuff about the Ferengi female part of the story.
But I mean, did they structure it that way?
Oh, I see.
That's what I mean.
So they changed the story to live up to that. Yeah. Yeah, it could be. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it's a good thought that maybe the original intention of the story was something else. But at the same time, we didn't see many stories like that in the 90s.
Yeah.
So it's unlikely that that's how the story even started.
Oh, gotcha.
Because it wouldn't have made it onto the show.
Yeah. Well, it was still a little too much for regular television.
It was a little too much, which is really sad and pathetic, but... But you know what? But it's completely okay to degrade women and make them look like useless idiots. That's fine. No problem.
Welcome to the 90s.
Oh my gosh. What else have you got for overanalysis?
Well, also, I was wondering, maybe he could have pushed the Negus to forget everything and keep his profits? Or reduce the profits?
Yeah, he did give up really easily.
Yeah. I mean, I assume this is something of a balancing act that... At what point does it motivate the Negus to arrange a tragic accident for you?
Yeah, I think he may have known that there wasn't anything else he could do at this point, because he actually quite embarrassed the Negus.
Yeah.
And so he probably knew that the best thing to do was just to get away from him, or let the Negus get away, I guess.
Right.
I don't know.
It's a balancing act here.
Yeah.
Some other observations. I think this really does show up how good the makeup effects are in this show.
Mm.
Wallace Shawn and Armin Shimerman are not the most attractive looking of men.
No.
So under...
In the classical sense.
In the classical sense, yes. But what's funny is, underneath all that makeup, Helen Udy, who played Pell, is kind of a bombshell.
Mm.
Because I looked her up as well, because she looks very young. To see the difference between her as the Ferengi and then in real life, it was like, wow, that really shows off how effective their makeup is.
Yeah.
That was sort of from a technical standpoint, that was really very impressive.
The Ferengi makeup in general is very impressive. I mean, it really covers up what the person looks like in general.
Yeah.
But also it looks very...
organic?
It looks very organic. That's the word I was looking for. Whereas Odo's makeup doesn't look organic at all.
Yeah, I can say I was impressed. Also, next thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if this episode is trying to explore in a, unfortunately, hammer to crack a walnut kind of thing, is
yes.
The concept that social norms, which may be highly regressive, are only norms if you personally enforce them, if you're the one that makes those decisions, and it's up to you individually not to. And this is where I think Quark, as the character, misses improving his own well-being, even his own profits, by enforcing regressive social norms that would not only help him, but also help Pell.
Yeah.
And that was another idea I thought maybe was being done in kind of a clunky way, but that they were trying to say, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. But social norms take the longest to change.
Yes.
And
but only because people don't choose to change them.
Yes. But it typically requires somebody who sees it differently or is willing out of the gate to do something differently.
Yeah.
Which I think, in general, the Ferengi aren't willing to do because they're focused on one thing. They're not focused on growth or evolution or social change. They're focused on profit. And with that really narrow mind,
right,
you're not even going to be looking at those things. But because of that, there's no excuse for the Ferengi female to not completely break out of it and change everything.
Right.
That makes no sense, but I don't know anything about, because I've never seen a Ferengi female before, just like Dax. I don't know anything about what's going on back on that planet where they're not even allowed outside, but it doesn't make any sense to me. Again, they have space travel and their women aren't allowed out of the house?
We'll learn more about this
later. Come on. That's just not happening.
We will learn more about this.
Mm. And I have a feeling I won't like it.
Oh, you might.
I doubt it.
Okay, and possibly my final analysis point, although I might have another one afterwards.
Well, you do often have a final.
Now, something that's a real detriment to the Ferengi economy, and potentially you're missing out on a huge profit. You're excluding half the population. You could immediately double the number of Ferengi extracting profit from various things by including the females. Also, those females will also be consumers. So you've got, you know, more consumers in the marketplace. It's like Quark closing his bar in the evening. You're missing potential profits by not including people. You idiots!
Well, but they also, being greedy jerks, might be thinking that, why would we let the female out and start stealing our profits?
That's a really good point. That would be a Ferengi way of looking at it, rather than thinking that, well, maybe we could double the profits. They'd be thinking, well, we'd only be getting half the profits. But if the profits are now twice as big, half is the same you would get anyway. In summary, idiots.
Yes.
Well, I think that wraps it up for my analysis. I could talk more about social messaging, but I think you're probably going to talk about that next. I'd be pretty sure you
well,
are.
Yes, let's talk about women in the future. I mean, where to even begin? If you're going to have a species that hates women this much, do I have to watch it? The answer is no. No, I don't.
Well, you didn't.
And I didn't. And now we're back to watching it. And I mean, you kind of made a point earlier that I was going to make in this section.
Yes.
About how I do feel like they're using this nonsense to justify their own behaviors in the workplace or to show that it's not that bad. Like, haha, isn't it funny?
Yeah.
It's not funny. It doesn't do anything for women. I don't like it. It tarnishes the whole show. It actually negatively impacts my experience as a woman viewing the show and makes me not want to watch it. And I don't get why anyone would think that was okay and just go about it like this was just completely fine.
Well, I don't think you're a guy from the 70s.
And this nonsense with the pinching and the manhandling of Kira. It's like we're in a diner in the 50s. And not in reality, but in a movie or something.
Yeah.
She's a major in the military. She has literally knocked Cardassians unconscious. And you don't think she's going to react to this. It's nonsense.
That is pretty hard to believe.
She didn't even react. It's completely ridiculous. She went from the angriest woman on the planet to just no reaction. It's stupid. But here's something we didn't really talk about earlier.
Okay.
The female is as smart as the men, if not smart. She's certainly smarter than Quark.
And Rom.
But she gives up everything because she's in love. It's just insulting.
Oh.
I don't like it.
But do you also think that's a she couldn't live the lie aspect of it? She wanted to be herself as she was. This is why I wonder about, is this part where it's also about the same-sex relationship of, if you like, she's coming out and to hell with if people like it or not. So, you know, it wasn't just the, if you like, the love aspect. It was the I'm being true to myself aspect.
Well, I think, as is quite often the case, you have a generous view of it and I have a negative view of it. Because if you're looking at it from that perspective, that's one thing. It's almost like, here's a person who is willing to look out for their own happiness rather than profit, which does seem like a step in evolution.
Yes.
And you can certainly look at it that way. But I would argue that it's not written that way. I feel like that's a stretch to get there. And instead, it's more reductive in that, of course, she's just a stupid woman who wouldn't care about anything other than love.
That's a really, that's putting it in a really dark place.
Well, you have to understand the way that I'm looking at it is they put me on a dark path and pushed me down the dark path. I then can't, when I get to the end of that dark path, I can't suddenly jump over to the light path.
Yeah.
I'm too far down that negative hole in order to now all of a sudden go, oh, well, gee, maybe this is that step in evolution that I've been looking for with the Ferengi. No, not really. I can't, it's too much of a leap.
Yeah.
I think it's too generous. But I will give you that you could look at it that way, and I'll allow you to look at it that way.
I'm very generous. I try and look on the happy side.
But remaining, well, not usually. But I do think you try to look on the happy side of this show.
Yes.
You do quite often have generous interpretations of things where I'm just like, I don't think so.
Yeah.
And sometimes you do have to do that with things that you really like. You do have to pull together the little bits and pieces that you find positive in order to keep going with something.
That's true.
So I would say, to kind of wrap up the Women in the Future section here, like, what are the lessons that we're either trying to teach or at the very least we're getting from it, even if it's not something that's specifically being taught to us?
Are you going to go negative or positive on this?
Negative. The first one is, if you can't accept the misogynistic behavior and just get over it, then there's something wrong with you. That's the first one.
That seems fair.
It never feels like they think there's anything wrong with this behavior. That's what I don't like.
Well, I don't think there's anybody who tells them that it's wrong. Did you notice that? There's nobody who really goes out of their way to say, yeah, you don't do that.
Sisko does nothing about the stuff that the Negus does to Kira, and he's there for two of the three things.
Yeah.
He does nothing. I don't get it.
Yeah, were those laws in place whereas you as a manager have to do something about sexual harassment?
Oh my gosh. You know, I kept saying that there hadn't been any incidents of sexual harassment for so long. Well, there's one. And the boss did nothing about it. He didn't say anything about it. He didn't do anything about it because, oh, haha, isn't that cute? I don't know. It's so stupid.
Yeah.
Nobody ever does anything about anything on the show, and it's degrading and pathetic. I don't know. I'm very disappointed in this episode.
It's a very disappointing episode. It's actually kind of jarring.
You know what really kept bothering me in this episode was thinking about what Terry Farrell went through as an actress.
Well, that's why I think some of this was messaging.
Gosh. I feel like we should just move on because this is a garbage episode in a great season. Things have been going so well. Episodes 1, 2, and 3, three of the best episodes so far of all of the 20-some episodes we've watched. And then the next couple were not as good, but this one is bad. Let's just go to rating. I feel like I've already lost all of our listeners by complaining. So let's just move on.
If you like the show, you've got to take the criticisms the positives of the show.
Let's just do rating.
Absolutely.
Thumbs up, thumbs down, or neutral. What is your rating?
Well, it's pretty easy for this one. Thumbs down. This is two thumbs down. It is so bad.
Yeah. Thumbs down, jerks. That's what I wrote at the end of my notes. Write something better.
Yeah.
Do we have a lot of Ferengi episodes? Because I don't think I can take it.
I don't want to give you spoilers.
Oh my goodness.
Okay, I will say the Ferengi improve.
They do not. I don't believe you.
Absolutely, they do.
Okay, well, let's just get on with our lives. Let's just wrap this up. That is enough for season 2, episode 7. Come back next week for episode 8. In the meantime, if you would like to send us your own over-analysis of this or any episode, please email us at rebingeit@gmail.com or tweet us at rebingeit. You can also go to talkthroughmedia.com and leave feedback for us there and listen to all of the other awesome podcasts on our network.
Thanks for joining us on the Rebinge Deep Space Nine podcast.
That's it for me.
And that's it for me.